Doubt is a signpost. I discovered the reason, I think, that so many people doubt the resurrection story, including Thomas. Just consider who it was who initially told the first accounts of the resurrection after the women. Many of them were fishermen, and everyone knows fishermen lie about their catches. Well, it's been a week since Easter, 1 week since all that chaos and excitement, 1 week since we commemorated the empty tomb, 1 week since we all said, "Hallelujah, Christ is risen, the Lord is risen indeed, hallelujah." It's 1 week after the resurrection, and the disciples are in the same place they were Easter night. You notice that? They're in the same room, behind the same locked doors. So, if the resurrection is such a big deal, such a life-changing event, why are they still stuck in the same place? What difference has the empty tomb made? How has it changed them? Has it let them see themselves and the world differently than they did before? Has it done anything at all for them? It looks at first glance like it hasn't made any difference at all. They're in the same house, behind the same locked doors as a week ago. What's changed? So I wonder, 1 week after Easter, what has Christ's resurrection done for you and me? Is your life different? Do you see and engage in the world in new ways today? What difference has the empty tomb made in your life since last week? I confess that when I look at my own life, it looks a whole lot like it did last Sunday. It looks a whole lot like it did a week ago and the week before that. And when I look at the world around us, it pretty much looks the same as it did a week ago. You know, I used to hear this gospel lesson read, and I've read it many times myself, and I found myself being very critical of the disciples. Have you found yourself doing that? Because I look at them and I see they're still stuck in the same place. I think to myself, they should have done better than that. After all, death has been defeated. Christ is risen. Hallelujah. Why aren't their lives different? I was really, in those moments, asking about my own life. Why isn't my life different after Easter? Why am I stuck in the same place? I should be doing better. I should be living the resurrection better, living it more powerfully, more fully, more authentically than what I am doing. After all, the Lord is risen indeed. Hallelujah. I've begun, however, to hear today's gospel lesson a little differently than I used to. And here's what I think the gospel lesson is telling all of us. First, Christ's resurrection is a big deal. Any argument? Second, the empty tomb is a life-changing event. Thirdly, the resurrection does make a difference in our lives. And this last one was key for me. It also takes time. Resurrection takes time. It's not just a one-time event. Did you know that? It's something that we, as followers of Christ, grow into over time. It's a process. It's a way of being and a life to be lived. By the grace of God, we are changing into resurrected people through our relationships and our circumstances of our lives. Because God wastes nothing. Every day that we wake up and go out into the world, we are stepping into the resurrected life. It's not always easy. And some days, let's be honest, it's just plain hard. I wonder if we sometimes come to Easter Sunday and the empty tomb expecting to wake up on Monday to a whole new life and a whole new world. I'm guessing that you awoke on Easter Monday to the same life and the same world that you saw on Good Friday. I know I did. It's not because the resurrection failed or because Jesus didn't do the Jesus thing in our lives. It's because the Jesus thing takes time. Maybe we need to let go of the fact of the empty tomb and start claiming the story of the resurrection. Did you know there's a difference between facts and story? Facts are one-dimensional. Stories are multi-dimensional. Facts inform the mind. Stories touch the heart. Facts transmit information. Stories transform lives. Think about it like this. A fact is static, like a snapshot of a particular moment in time. A story is dynamic. It's like a movie and it takes us across time. The empty tomb, my friends, is a fact. The resurrection is a story. Maybe we need to begin to understand the resurrection as a kind of movie of our lives instead of a snapshot of Christ's life. The fact of the empty tomb is not the full story of the resurrection. The facts about Jesus' life are not the story of Jesus. The facts of your life and my life are not the full story of our lives. Facts are just the starting point for the story. The fact of the empty tomb is the starting point for the resurrection story. Whatever facts that you and I woke up to on Easter morning are simply the starting point for the rest of the story of the resurrection. Too often, however, we take facts as the entire story. And that's when we come to Thomas. Because that's what he did. When facts come to mind, what facts come to mind when you hear his name? Think about it. He was the doubter, right? That's what we think of first off. Unless I see the mark of the nails in his hand and put my finger in the marks of the nails and my hand in his side, I will not believe. That Thomas doubted may be the only time that fact comes to mind about doubting. It is so prevalent in this story that what do we call him? Doubting Thomas. What if that fact, however, is just the starting point of the resurrection working in his life? What if? What if that moment in that locked room is not the whole story? What if where we start is less important than where we go and where we end? So I ask you, do you know the rest of Thomas's story? Do you know where he died? He died in India. Yes. He was an apostle to the people of India. He brought the gospel of Christ to India. He died a martyr because he was run through with 5 spears from 5 soldiers. That's how he died. That doesn't sound like a doubter, does it? It sounds like someone who grew and changed, someone for whom the resurrection of Christ became more and more real, someone for whom the empty tomb made a difference. It just took a little time. as it does for most, if not all of us. We remember doubting Thomas, but please don't forget confessing Thomas. He's in today's gospel as well, the confessing Thomas, because what does he say there? My Lord and my God. With those words, Thomas has recognized and named the new relationship, the new worldview, a new way of being. Somewhere between doubting Thomas and confessing Thomas is the story of the resurrection and Thomas's life. All that stuff about doubting Thomas, the fact of his disbelief, is just Thomas's starting place. Nothing more, nothing less. It's neither good nor bad. It's a starting place. And we all have our starting places, you and I. What's your starting place, I wonder? What are the facts of your life today? The starting place for the story of our resurrection is wherever we are at this moment. Whatever your life is today, whatever your circumstances are, that's the starting point of your story of the resurrection. So, if you're dealing with deep loneliness, or sorrow, or loss, that's your starting point. It is the locked room that Christ comes and enters into. If you are locked in a house of fear or confusion or darkness, that's your starting point and the place in which Jesus enters and stands in. If it's illness or old age or disability or uncertainty are the facts of your life, that's your starting point to which Christ comes and shows up and starts your resurrection story. If you feel lost, or you feel betrayed, or disappointed, or overwhelmed, that's your starting point and the house that Christ enters. If joy, gratitude, and celebration are the facts of your life today, that's the starting point of your story of resurrection. All those things I've described, and probably thousands more, are many ways the doors of our houses get locked. Whatever it may be for you, it's just the starting point. The great tragedy is not that the disciples are in the same house, behind the same locked doors, because that's just the starting point. The great tragedy will be if the disciples refuse to unlock those doors, refuse to open those doors, and refuse to get out of the house. Many years ago, Dr. Gordon, a famous preacher, brought with him to church one Sunday an old, rusty, beat-up birdcage. And as he was giving a sermon, he at one point stopped and he held up the birdcage and he said, "You might be wondering why I got this birdcage here. As a matter of fact, it's not the normal part of an Easter service having a birdcage here, but let me tell you a story. Several days ago, I noticed there was a little boy in tattered and torn blue jeans and a dirty t-shirt, cap off to the side, whistling and walking down an alley swinging this birdcage. Clinging to the bottom of the cage were little field sparrows that he had caught. So I stopped him and I asked, "Say, sonny, what do you got there?" He said, "Oh, I've got some birds." "What are you going to do with them?" I asked. "Oh, I'm going to mess around with them and tease them, something like that." "Well," I asked, "when you get tired of them, what are you going to do?" He thought for a moment, he said, "Well, I've got a couple of cats at home and they like birds. I think I'll just let them have them." Dr. Gordon reported his heart went out to those little birds trapped in that cage. So he made the little lad an offer. How much do you want for the birds? Well, surprised, the boy said, well, mister, these birds ain't any good. The little fellow said, but how about $2? Dr. Gordon said, sold. So he reached into his pocket and peeled off $2 bills. The little boy shoved the bird cage towards Dr. Gordon and celebrated his stroke of good luck. When the little boy had left, the pastor walked a good distance away, opened the little cage door and said, shoo, shoo. And he shoved out the door those little field sparrows and they flew away. I love that story because I think it illustrates our lives very well. I really do. At some point, maybe even now, we find ourselves trapped in a cage. Sometimes we're there because of our own choices. Sometimes we are there because of the circumstances of life. In this cage, we are sometimes left to the mercy of others, and our prospects don't look so rosy. The resurrection of Christ is not just the hope for the future when we die. It's our hope here and now. So I ask you, what cage are you finding yourself in today that you're hoping someone will come and let you out? What are the doors locked in your life? What are the things that have kept you stuck in the same place for a long time? I'm saying again to you, that's just the starting place. Don't judge it as good or bad, right or wrong. It's just where you are, and it's the place Christ comes and shows up in your life. It happened twice in today's gospel lesson. Both times the disciples were in the same house, behind the same locked doors, and Jesus showed up. He stands among them. The walls and the locked doors of their house could not keep Jesus out. And the walls and the locked doors of your house will not keep him out. He steps into the midst of our house through the locked doors and he breathes peace and life upon each one of us. He breathes peace and hope into us. He breathes peace and courage into us. He breathes peace and strength into us. And that breath of peace, it's the key that unlocks that door. So take a deep breath. Take it all in, his peace. And let it fill and enliven you today. Let it give you hope and courage and strength to unlock and open the doors of your life. And then get out of the house. Last week we celebrated the greatest event that has ever occurred. It's a story that you took home with you, but it stays at home. What good, if it stays at home, what good is it? This week I'm telling you, I want you to take that story and get out of the house. Open the doors to the story of your resurrection, your rebirth, and get out of the house with Jesus by your side.